मम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य गणञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। So the last time I was here, I spoke for 3 nights from Sri Bhakti Loka, and although we spoke about the topic of tolerating the urge to speak, it was under a different category of the topic of patience and how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur defined patience. He says in the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of patience are explained, and he quoted the verse Vacho Vegam Manasakrota Vegam Jiva Vegan Udarapasta Vegam Itan Vegan Yo Vishaheta Dira Savam Apimam Pritivim Sasishyat. That a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger and the urges of the tongue, belly and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So we only discussed the urge to speak, tolerating the urge to speak. And I guess for those who are not here, it may be a little bit difficult to follow how this applies to patience. So I'll just give a very, very brief summary. And that is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that those who are impatient, they are restless, or as he says right here, they cannot do any work. And we explained that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was speaking about those who are sadhakas, who are engaged in the process of sadhana bhakti. And the work he referred to was about the internal work. And the internal work about which he spoke in connection to this patience was this tolerating the urge to speak, the demands of the mind, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. In other words, we have to be patient, but at the same time, we must learn to tolerate these urges if we wish to make progress in devotional service. And he concluded the topic of patience and by explaining that a devotee must be patient, that he will someday get Krishna's mercy, and that he is prepared to wait to obtain that mercy, whether it comes today, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, or in some future birth. But he will go on serving Krishna. And this type of patience, he explains, is essential for the practitioners of bhakti yoga. And he defined that the achievement of Krishna's mercy is that just as the karmis, they want to get some result, they want to get some fruit of gain, the jnanis, they want some result, they want liberation, and the devotees, what is the fruit of their sadhana, which they wish to achieve? And the fruit of their sadhana is that Krishna someday will become pleased by their devotion. So, in this way, he introduces this topic of patience in relationship to this verse from Upadeshamrita. And the last time, as we explained, how a devotee is not just simply blindly patient and doesn't do anything about it, but in his efforts to tolerate the urge to speak, he finds the ways and means by which he can restrain himself from speaking about unnecessary subject matters especially in relationship to discussions about others. And we took that, I think, the full gamut. We covered when is it appropriate to talk about others and when it is inappropriate to speak about others. And in this way, when a devotee understands the guidelines and restrains himself, tolerates the urge to speak, and speaks only about others when only it is necessary, and does not speak about others when it is not necessary. And we went through the whole list. We won't go through that again. If you want to hear the list, you'll have to listen to the recordings or read Sri Bhakti Loka, because they're all in here. And tonight we're going to go to the next, about tolerating the urges of the mind. And we'll begin by reading a little bit, and then we will speak a little bit about how to tolerate the urges of the mind. It is the duty of a sober person to tolerate the urge of the mind. Until one is habituated to control the urge of the mind, how can one perform devotional service with attention? A materialist sits in the chariot of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges except during sleep. Even during sleep, many thoughts such as good and bad dreams come. In order to regulate the urges of the mind, rishis have propounded Ashtanga Yoga and Raja Yoga, but the Lord's prescription is that one should regulate the mind from the inferior tastes by giving it a higher taste. Those who are on the path of devotional service can easily regulate the mind. The mind cannot remain without urges. If urged towards spiritual subjects, the mind is properly engaged and it will not hanker for insignificant subjects. Many people think that without Ashtanga Yoga, there is no alternative to regulate the mind. But Patanjali Muni has accepted that just as Ashtanga Yoga regulates the mind, Bhakti Yoga can also. Meditation on the Supreme Lord as propounded by Patanjali is not pure devotional service. Rather, it is sakama bhakti, or motivated. If devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind, then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. So a lot here that we've read so far. Where's that coming from? So, here we're going into the next phase, next level. First is tolerating the urge to speak, now tolerating the urges of the mind. And of course, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just as he explained the consequences previously. What were the consequences? Can you remember what were the consequences for those who cannot tolerate the urge to speak? It was consequences. Does anyone remember? Creating enmity. Very good. Exactly. It says, the consequences, if you can't tolerate the urge to speak, is you'll create enmity, because immediately you'll start speaking about others and the whole process continues. So here, the consequences, if one doesn't control the urge of the mind, how can one perform devotional service with attention? Therefore, he says that The materialist sits in the chariot of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges except during sleep. So, fortunately, this is oftentimes seen as an opportunity to get relief from the mind. And materialists who are very strongly controlled by these urges of the mind often will seek shelter in sleep. But then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that even during sleep, many thoughts will come, such as good and bad dreams, so it doesn't stop. I think last time, you already used the example of the good and bad dreams in relationship to our other topic. We used the example from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, where it's described that the dualities of the material world were like dreaming. Right? Although the dualities of the material world do not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul considers them to be real due to his conditioned intelligence. And he says, in this imaginary world, separate from Krishna, the conditioned soul dreams of something favorable and something horrible, or he daydreams of something he would like to have or he would like to avoid, and he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his imagination. And we gave the example that when we have good dreams, we wake up and we're sad, and when we have bad dreams, we wake up and we're happy. Good dreams, we wake up, we're sad because it was nice, we were enjoying it. And when you wake up, you realize, oh, it was only a dream. And then when you have a bad dream, you're suffering in anxiety. And oftentimes what usually happens is when there's a bad dream, you wake up and get relief. Oh, it was only a dream. But the happiness and distress that one experienced was not connected to reality, it was only connected to a dream. In the same way, the verse explains that there are night dreams and then there are daydreams. We daydream of something we would like to have or something we would like to avoid, but the result is we create a reality that has no existence beyond our imagination. That the only reality is that which is connected to Krishna. Otherwise, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's duality. There's anything, there's a verse that Chaitanya Charitam reads, anything not conceived in relationship with Krishna is understood to be illusion. None of the illusions, either uttered by words or conceived in the mind, are reality. Therefore, when we say good or bad in relationship to these things, it is simply a mental concoction. And then Lord Chaitanya said, Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Gyan Sabha Manodama E Balaya Manda E Sabha Brahma. He says that to say this is good, this is bad, it's all an illusion. Because nothing is good or bad. It is, he says, it's Manodama, it's the religion of the mind. Think this is good, this is bad. Duality. We live in constant duality. And as long as there's duality, there will always be anxiety. So therefore, even during sleep, we're in duality. And during our wakeful state, of course, we're always in duality, always calculating. Will this work out in my favor? Will it be good? Will it make me happy? And then when we get the result, we're immediately contemplate how to enjoy it, and because it's temporary, can't satisfy the self, we go manodharma, good, bad, this is good, reject it, we go to something else. So, therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the materialist sits in the chariot of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges. In order to regulate the urges of the mind, rishis have propounded Ashtanga Yoga and Raja Yoga. But the Lord's prescription is that one should regulate the mind from the inferior taste by giving it a higher taste. So, This is a very common topic. Oftentimes, people are very much interested, not only devotees, non-devotees, how to become peaceful. It's actually, of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that how can there be, what is it? One who is not connected to the Supreme can have neither a controlled mind nor transcendental intelligence, without which there's no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So Krishna very clearly explains that if one's not connected with Krishna, the mind cannot be controlled, no transcendental intelligence, no peace. But nonetheless, it is very much a sought-after experience, especially in modern society. There are many prescriptions given for how to become peaceful. But it's interesting to take note what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here. He says, he speaks about Patanjali Muni. Of course, the process given by Patanjali Muni is how to control the mind. Through different stages of evolution, one gradually comes to samadhi. And I believe he describes five different states of the mind: Kshipta, Mudha, Vikshipta, Ekagra, and Niruddha. Vikshipta is when the mind is always disturbed, influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, cannot in any way fix it on Krishna. When the mind is always looking for alternatives besides Krishna, this is uncontrolled, this completely disturbed mind, Kshipta. And Mudha is a state of the mind when then the mind is constantly bewildered by being influenced by the modes of passion, filled with unlimited desires, and then the modes of ignorance, the tendency to sleep, and the mind is always just looking for something to latch onto, but can't find it. And Vikshipta is described as a state when the mind is still disturbed, but somewhere is occasionally, just occasionally, there's a little glimpse of relief. But even that relief in itself, which is essentially what he's going to talk about here, that even that relief in the self is not real, because there's a lot more to life than relief. And in fact, the essence of this topic that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to speak about, he's going to describe what is life beyond relief. Because everybody wants relief. But actually relief, the desire for relief in of itself isn't sufficient to get it. Because it's temporary. Even Yen Ravandaksha Vamukta Maninas, you know, even if one gets Vamukta Maninas, liberation, one performs severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position, their intelligence is impure, and they fall down there from their position of imagined superiority because they fail to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Lord Brahma describes. So even if one performs severe austerities and penances, it's very difficult to control the mind and to give it permanent shelter. And in fact, Prabhupada speaks about that also, I think in Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, in chapter 2, verse, is it 66? Yes, that verse I quoted before. In the verse, one who is not connected with the Supreme can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Prabhupada explains a very important point. He says, unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there's no possibility of peace. So it is confirmed in the fifth chapter, when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, that he is the proprietor of all universal manifestations, that he is the real friend of all living entities, then only can one have real peace. Therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. Disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. And when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, and friend of everyone and everything, then one can, with a steady mind, bring about peace. Therefore, one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace, however much he may make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. So, Prabhupada is saying that there cannot be a final goal for the mind. There's no permanent shelter. Whatever we latch ourselves on, even if we try to latch ourselves on peace, relief. Krishna bhakti nishkama ate eva shanta bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. The devotee of Lord Krishna, he's peaceful, whereas bhukti, those who desire material enjoyment, those who desire liberation, mukti, siddhi, those who desire mystic yogic perfections, they're still kami, there's still some desire separate from Krishna. And as long as there's a desire separate from Krishna, sakali ashanta, there can't be peace. It's a selfish desire to want peace. And that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying. Okay, everybody wants peace, and everybody looks for different formulas by which they can obtain peace. But as he states right here, he says, meditation on the Supreme Lord as propounded by Patanjali is not pure devotional service. Rather, it is sakama bhakti, or motivated. If devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind, then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. It's not devoid. There's still, I want peace. My mind is crazy. They're going for one thing. I'm always in anxiety. So people look for ways, and sure, it's very attractive. People say, here's how you get peace of mind. Prabhupada introduced it that way also. But he didn't introduce it in an artificial way. He introduced it by saying, yena tena rakarina mana krishna naveshayat. That is the duty of the spiritual master to somehow or other get his disciple to think of Krishna. And then everything else will follow. All the rules and regulations and everything, they'll follow, they'll come afterwards. But somehow or other, Prabhupada started right from the very beginning, Krishna. Somehow or other, one has to fix his mind on Krishna. And to the degree that mind is fixed on Krishna, then as an automatic byproduct, right, what happens? The mind comes under control, has a superior engagement, and then, as Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested state of peace, because one who is in Krishna consciousness, he's transcended the dualities of this world. Krishna Surya Sammaya Hayandakara Yahan Krishna Nahamaya Mayara Arikara. Krishna is like sunshine, Maya is like darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. Similarly, as soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, then immediately the influence of the Lord's material energy is extinguished. So Krishna consciousness is like sunshine. So to the degree that one's thinking of Krishna, he's not thinking about how unhappy I am. He's not looking for relief. He's found an ultimate goal. And Prabhupada says that due to a lack of not coming to an ultimate goal, as we just write here, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. Disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. So whatever goal we establish short of Krishna consciousness, it cannot fully satisfy the self. And therefore, bhoga tyaga. We accept it for some time, and then it gives us some temporary peace, or We oftentimes quote that verse also, Prahlad Maharaj, when he says, in the material world, every materialist is endeavoring for happiness, and he's trying to mitigate his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. He says, actually, one can be happy as long as one doesn't endeavor for happiness. Because as soon as he begins his endeavor for happiness, he immediately creates his conditions for distress. So he's thinking, I'm making my endeavor for happiness. I want to become happy. That's it. I want to become happy. So this endeavor for happiness is making me happy because I think at the end there will be happiness. That's the daydream, as we described before. The daydream is, yes, I'm happy now because I know that when I get to the end of my goal, whatever it may be, I'll be happy. But that's the daydream. And there's the daydream, which is dreams of something he would like to have, or he dreams of something he would like to avoid. I know what doesn't make me happy. Just like I was speaking to somebody the other day, very sincere devotee. And this devotee had gone through many, many difficulties in their life prior to coming to Krishna consciousness. And they were explaining all the different sequences of events that happened to them and how they finally, you know, after going through so many difficulties and childhood and married life with so many different problems with family, and they finally came in contact with the devotees, and one devotee particularly helped very much this devotee, and this devotee felt so indebted to the devotee. And then the devotee was explaining that now that I finally come to this platform, every time anything that even closely resembles what I went through before just appears, immediately he was explaining how difficult it is. I just need peace. I just need peace. And then the devotee was explaining that in her present married life, how sometimes certain activities acted as a catalyst to remind them of what they experienced in their previous life. And they tried to avoid by completely controlling the situation so it didn't happen. And when you try to control the situation and you can't control yourself, the only thing you can do is to try to control everything around you so you don't get disturbed. That's the first thing. If you can't control yourself, if you can't be peaceful, you have to avoid anything that causes distress. And sometimes, due to our conditioned life, we have a whole series of events that we've experienced that have been previous causes of distress, and we just, as soon as something small, even small, seems to be appearing, it merely triggers a reaction in us and we try to avoid it. And usually what it does, it affects the people that are closest to us. Right? Because I can't go there. And I can't control my mind. So you have to, don't do that. Don't do that. So, in the course of the discussion I had with this devotee, I was remembering this section that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was speaking about, which I label it as life beyond relief. Because when we daydream of something we would like to have, peace, or something we would like to avoid, disturbances, we create a reality that has no existence beyond our imagination. It's temporary. It's not real. It's simply temporary. And what it does sometimes is it has an amazing influence, as we said, upon the people who surround us. We begin to mistreat them. We can try to control them. You know, we try to change them, manipulate them. I need my peace. But actually, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, that to obtain that peace, that attempt to attain that peace, to create the perfect situation where we won't be disturbed, is in itself temporary, and it will not give us the peace that we're looking for. And therefore, it's a temporary state of relief, but not really peace. To go beyond that, that is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here about controlling the urges of the mind. To go beyond that, he explains, because he says simply to try to regulate the urges of the mind so that one is not disturbed, it's sakama bhakti. We should not think that it is a devotional activity freed from material desires. It's beneficial, it's helpful when it's used for fixing the mind on Krishna. But sakama means we want to use Krishna to give us something that we still need. That is sakama. Kevala bhakti, pure devotional service, means everything is for Krishna. Right? Just like there is different definitions of bhakti, like arop siddha bhakti and sangha siddha bhakti and sarup siddha bhakti. These are different stages of devotional service. But arop siddha bhakti means there's sakama bhakti. There's bhakti because bhakti has to be there. If we want to get the results, there has to be some bhakti. But because there's still some personal desire, what is it? Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pisachi hiti vartate. Like bhukti, Rupa Goswami says, bhukti and mukti, they're like two witches which haunt one like a ghost. As long as these two witches are still there in the heart, one will never be able to experience bhakti, pure bhakti. So as long as these desires are there, there cannot be real peace. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that Patanjali has prescribed a method for controlling the mind. As we started to explain before, there's the kshipta, disturbed mind, the mudha, state of the mind, vikshipta, where there's some slight relief. And then beyond that, there's called ekagra. Ekagra means when the mind is fixed on some object. And it becomes more controlled. And nirudha is a state when the mind is actually controlled in of itself, not dependent upon any external object. So the Patanjali Yoga system prescribes a method which the mind can be controlled, fixed upon an object, and then internally satisfied, just as Krishna says, for one who conquers the mind, super soul is reached and he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, they're all the same. And there is another verse, what is it? When Arjuna asks Krishna, what is the symptoms of a man who's situated in transcendence? And Krishna says, When the person finds satisfaction of this, gives up all desires for mental concoction, which arises from mental concoction, and he finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is described to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So satisfaction in the self alone means when he actually gets to the state where the mind is completely conquered, super soul is reached, he attains tranquility. But when one reaches the super soul, then what happens in that state of mind? And Prabhupada explains in the commentary, he's always following the superior dictation of the Lord. He comes, by that process, he may gradually come to the platform of coming in contact with the Lord and following the superior dictation of the Lord. by in his efforts to control his mind. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Patanjali Yoga is not freed from sakama, material desires, because the motivation is peace. Where bhakti, the motivation is the pleasure of the Lord. Even if one still has some desire, the goal is to please the Lord. And because the goal is to please the Lord, akama savakamava mokshakama udaradi tivena bhakti yogena yajita purusha param. Whether one is filled with material desires, whether one has no material desires, whether one is desiring liberation, a person with a broader intelligence must by all means worship the Lord. Prabhupada, in so many places, he emphasizes this point that by coming in contact with devotional service and coming in contact with the Lord, even with impure motives, the Lord can purify even the most impure place. Just as the sun can purify even the most impure place by its ultraviolet rays, the Supreme Lord can purify the most impure heart. What is that verse? Oh, it's a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Krishna says, if my devotee engages in my devotional service and at the same time he wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is like a fool who willingly gives up nectar and drinks poison. Why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget. And then he quotes a verse in the Bhagavatam which states that when a devotee engages in the service of the Lord with a desire to have these desires fulfilled, the Lord fulfills the desires of a devotee in such a way that the devotee won't come back and ask for it again. That is his special kindness. So even if one has some desires, if he worships the Lord and endeavors to please the Lord, then gradually what happens is that these desires can become purified because one knows what the goal is. The goal, as we emphasized last time we were here, we didn't speak about it so much this time, but as we emphasized last time, the goal is Krishna's pleasure. That is the goal. Right from the very beginning, the goal is established. And then, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, progress is a series of steps in the right direction. We know what the goal is right from the very beginning. Srila Prabhupada, when he began to introduce Krishna consciousness to everyone, he didn't just package it in such a way to make us think we're getting something less than Krishna's lotus feet. Right from the very beginning, he says, any system of religion which teaches its followers to love Krishna, to love the Supreme Lord, that is the goal. And establish the goal right from the very beginning. So the goal, the ultimate goal, should always be there in the mind. And that's why Prabhupada says, disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. As soon as we think, yes, the goal is peace, the goal is fruitive results, the goal is liberation, these things are insufficient to bring about real peace. But when the goal of Krishna consciousness and the goal of pleasing the Lord by our devotional service is there within the heart, then the devotee remains fixed despite whatever obstacles, because this is what we spoke about last time, that there'll be many obstacles on the path of devotional service. But although there are obstacles, the devotee is always fixed on what is the goal, and he never wavers, and he's always very careful to stay fixed on the path. Vyavasayatmaka buddhi ekhi hakuru nandana. Krishna says those are on who are, what is it? Vyavasayatmaka buddhi. Those are on this path, a resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child, the Guru's intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So Krishna says that one has to become vyavasayatmaka buddhi, fixed on the goal. And Prabhupada used to oftentimes quote in relationship to that verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explaining that in this particular verse, the goal is to please the spiritual master. Right? That there's no question of being able to remain fixed on the goal without being fixed. And he explained even in relationship to his own service that he was given the instructions of his spiritual master and he always remembered those instructions of his spiritual master. And because he was always fixed in executing the order of the spiritual master, prepared to do anything to execute those orders, he said, therefore, he was able to achieve the result which appeared as a result of his mercy of his spiritual master. He says, that is vyavasayatmakabhuti. The goal is to please the Lord. And of course, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati katopi. The means for pleasing the Lord is by pleasing the spiritual master. So, this is about how to deal with the urges of the mind, to control the urges of the mind. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making it very clear. I'm going to continue a little bit more. I wanted to discuss a little bit about anger this evening too, because that's another thing that oftentimes people deal with or don't deal with. And he says, first, just to complete the topic about the mind, he says, favorable cultivation of devotional service in relationship to Krishna is the real meaning of pure bhakti. Therefore, whenever pure devotional service is performed, joyfulness of the mind automatically arises from amongst extraneous fruits. And then he quotes a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmat kenapyupayena mana Krishna navesha yet. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. If one follows this instruction, then the mind will be engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, and it will not easily wander into other subjects. For the practitioner, the urge of the mind is regulated by pure cultivation of favorable devotional service in relationship to Krishna. By carefully meditating on this subject, one can know the inherent differences between yoga and bhakti. So that he concludes the urges of the mind. There's much more we could say about the urges of the mind. An important thing, I think, also that I should probably include is the point that he makes. He said, the mind cannot remain without urges. This is a very important point also. Because, again, this is, we oftentimes think, well, we have to control the urge of the mind, so, but the mind can't remain without urges. So, therefore, the whole point that he's making is that if we have to control the urges of the mind, yet the mind cannot remain without urges, we have to learn how to open the urges for the positive activities of Krishna consciousness. Just like, what is that verse? We oftentimes quote it, where Krishna, Shinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana, that Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the super soul in the heart of all living beings, he cleanses desires from material enjoyment within the heart of those persons who have developed the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. But he hasn't killed the urge of the mind. He's developed the proper urges. The proper urge is, yes, I need to become eager to hear about Krishna. Develop the urge to hear the messages when properly heard and chanted. I need to hear. If I don't hear, my mind will take me all over the place. Or we quoted last time that verse about the topics of the Supreme Lord and the place where the pure devotees meet following the rules and regulations. If one gets an opportunity to hear their descriptions of the pastimes of the Lord, which continually flow like the waves of the river, that one will become freed from all distresses of life. He will stop thinking about hunger and thirst and will become free from illusion, lamentation, and fear. The urge is the positive urge. the urge to always speak about Krishna. That urge, the urge to always hear about Krishna, that is a positive urge. So therefore he says that the mind cannot remain without urges, therefore we have to be eager to develop the urge to hear and to speak about Krishna. So we're not going to finish the topic of anger, but I want to start it because it's also very relevant. To restrain the urge of anger is compulsory for those who are thirsty for devotional service. Anger arises when a man's lust is unfulfilled. When one is angry, the result gradually leads to ruination. Here's the consequence. As we said before, consequence, if you can't control the urge to speak, enmity arises. You can't control the urge of the mind. Consequence, you can't perform devotional service with attention. And if you can't control the urge of the anger, then the consequence is it leads to ruination. It is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta. We quoted that verse already. Because of a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. No insignificant lust can remain in the heart of one who relishes pure devotional service. Therefore, there is no possibility of anger arising in his mind. Those whose devotional service is motivated cannot conquer anger. What is it? Prabhupada explains in Upadeshamrita, two states of mind, avirota priti, right, and virota yukta krodha. Avirota priti means attachments, intense attachments, which arise from attachment to Mayavad philosophy or for fruitive activities or just for material enjoyment. And then virota yukta krodha is the anger which is result of it, due to unfulfilled attachments. Anger arises. Right? We become yes, I have to get it. And then anything obstructs the fulfillment of that attachment, we become angry. So he says right here that those whose devotional service is motivated cannot conquer anger. Because anger cannot be conquered by intelligence. Yeah, it says right here. It is not possible to conquer anger by intelligence alone. In a very short time, attachment for sense enjoyment overcomes the function of the intelligence and gives anger a place in its kingdom. Right. Contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment, lust, anger, delusion, bewilderment of memory. When the memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. One falls in the material whirlpool. And what to speak of? When Arjuna asks Krishna the question, what is it that compels a person to act sometimes even against his own will? And what does Krishna say? It is lust only, Arjuna, which is later transformed into anger, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And then he explains where the lust is situated, but nonetheless, it is lust which is transformed into anger. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying those whose devotional service is motivated cannot conquer anger. It is not possible to conquer anger by intelligence alone. In a very short time, attachment for sense enjoyment overcomes the function of the intelligence and gives anger a place in its kingdom. So, of course, the topic is how to restrain the urge of anger, because the consequences of anger, we oftentimes experience them. And in ways that we see are not very favorable for devotional service. In an angry state of mind, one may improperly commit offense towards another devotee, may harm another person. And Prabhupada explains, I think it was in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, in the teachings of Bhishma Dev, Prabhupada, in the commentary, he says, the best way to control anger is by learning forgiveness. very important. He says, this is the best way, by learning how to forgive others. And in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, it says the quality of the Brahman is to culture forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. And the Supreme Lord Hari is very pleased with those who are forgiving. This is a verse that was spoken by Jamadagni, wasn't it? Jamadagni to Parashuram, right? Yeah, after Parashuram killed Kartavyarjuna, right? Something like that. Yeah, Jamadagni instructed him that why did you do this? You should be very, because Kartavyarjuna, he was very proud of his strength, and he came to the ashram of Jamadagni, and he stole his Kamadenu and brought it back to his place of residence. And then when Parashuram returned and found out, he went and killed Kartavyarjuna. And he was very, and Jamadagni heard about this, he was very disturbed and said, why? You should be very forgiving. If anger is not controlled, it brings ruination. Another example, I think, is in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam with Dhruva Maharaj, when his anger became too excessive and he killed the yakshas, when they killed his brother, because one yaksha had killed his brother Uttama, he became so angry that he desired to wipe out the whole yaksha race for the killing of his brother. And then, who was it that came before him? Swayambhuva Manu came to him and said, what are you doing? One or a few yakshas were involved in the killing of your brother, but you're destroying the whole yaksha race. Stop your anger now before it destroys you and everything around you. And Prabhupada, in the comment, and he explained how dangerous that a person has to control his anger, and if he can't control his anger, it will bring ruination. And Prabhupada explains in the commentary, I think he told the story there about Narada Muni and how he had given instructions to a snake. And one time this snake became very much inclined towards the instructions of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni accepted him as his disciple, and once he became a disciple, he no longer would bite anybody. And then what happened is that gradually people began to see that the serpent wasn't biting anybody. And then children began throwing stones and sticks at the serpent. And then the serpent was feeling completely taken advantage of, because his nature was to bite, become angry. But Narada Muni instructed him, don't become angry. So he went back to Narada Muni and said, I'm following your instructions, but all these children are taking complete advantage of me, and they're throwing stones and sticks. What should I do? And Narada instructed him, he said, you should spread your hoods as if you're angry, but don't bite. And Prabhupada tells this story. He says that sometimes a devotee, he has to, in order to deal with materialistic elements, worldly elements of the material world, we have to show them. In other words, the point is we have to utilize anger for the service of the Lord. And therefore, utilizing anger for the service of the Lord is one thing, but to utilize anger for the service of the Lord means we have to be in control. But the nature of anger is such that if we're really angry, it's uncontrolled, and we can't control it. We are controlled by the anger. And that is the difference. That is the difference. And one who sees that his anger is arising in an uncontrollable way, why is he becoming so angry? Because it's one thing if just like Srila Prabhupada, sometimes he would chastise his disciples, he would display anger at their nonsense. But the next moment, he would be smiling, perfectly pacified and peaceful. Right? And Prabhupada explains that how can a parent chastise a child if he's not angry? Or how could Arjuna fight in battle if he wasn't angry? He said sometimes one has to utilize anger for the service of the Lord. So it's one thing to utilize anger for the service of the Lord, but it's another thing to be utilized by anger. And we cannot in any way justify being utilized by anger and claiming it's in the service of the Lord. Therefore, that's why it is essential that one has to learn to tolerate this anger. Because if one doesn't tolerate it, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it will lead to ruination. Total ruination. Why? Because then we'll commit some activity, being under the influence exclusively of the modes of material nature, not dictated by the will of the Lord, but dictated by our own attachments, whether it's attachment for respect, attachment for profit, attachment for prestige, and something steps in the way and we become angry and we deal harshly with others, that cannot be claimed as anger in the service of the Lord. Just as Narada Muni told the serpent, okay, spread your hoods as if you're angry, but don't bite. So Prabhupada was using it as an example that sometimes it may be necessary to display anger to fulfill a particular purpose. Although it is also said that one can become angry. I think it was Narottam Das Thakur who explains that lust, I engage lust by offering the fruits of my activities for the service of the Lord. And anger I can display by becoming angry at those who are envious of Krishna's devotees and who offend Krishna's devotees. But still, towards ourselves, there's a difference. Towards ourselves, a devotee has to learn how to become equipoised in happiness and distress, honor, dishonor. He has to see them as all the same and transcend the dualities of the material world by controlling the mind and seeing everything in relationship to Krishna. When one sees everything in relationship to Krishna, then he can easily overcome his anger because he sees this is Krishna. This is Krishna doing this to me. It's Krishna who's put me in this situation for a reason. He wants me to experience this. He wants to bring me close to him. He wants me to be purified. So towards ourselves, the devotee should be ready to tolerate. We quoted that verse last time. Taraskrita vipalabdak shaptak shipta hatahapi. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. That is a devotee. Why? Because internally, devotee sees everything in relationship with Krishna. So towards himself, he accepts it, he tolerates it, and tolerates these urges. So, therefore, the point is being made here that those whose devotional service is motivated cannot conquer anger. It is not possible to conquer anger by intelligence alone. In a very short time, attachment for sense enjoyment overcomes the function of the intelligence and gives anger a place in its kingdom. And then he begins to speak about the song of the Avanti Brahman and how the Avanti Brahman was able to very quickly control his anger. But I think the curtains are about to open. I think RT was it 5 minutes and nine, 10 minutes and nine? So we should probably leave a few minutes in case anybody has any questions between now and the Artik. Let's stop here. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for this wonderful lecture. Maharaj, you spoke about dualities in the beginning of the lecture. So, like you were saying that it is like we see things good and bad. And so I wanted to ask that, isn't it a part of our like daily life that we differentiate things and distinguish, and it's required when we choose things which are favorable for us and not for our services, for our sadhana? So can you elaborate more on this aspect of duality?
Yes, because it is the principle of surrender, devotional service, to accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable. That is explained. Yes, we have to discriminate, but that's for devotional service. But the duality that we spoke about, good and bad, is in anything that's conceived in relationship to ourselves. So we begin to calculate, just like Krishna tells Brahma, that whatever you see that has no connection with me, you should know it to be my illusory energy, or that reflection that which appears in the darkness. So when we see something separate from Krishna, and we think, oh, this is good. Or we see something separate from Krishna, and we think, oh, this is bad. That good and bad, as Krishna says, that's my illusory. You should know it is my illusory energy. It's my maya, or that reflection which appears in the darkness. But when we see it favorable for the service of Krishna, or unfavorable for the service of Krishna, that transcends dualities because it's for Krishna. As soon as it's for me, dualities is there. But everything for Krishna, therefore we should always make distinctions. That's quickly to answer your question, because we don't have that much time, but I think I covered the point. Yes? Some other questions?
When you mentioned about Dhruv Maharaj, so sometimes is it that some people, before they become Krishna conscious or come in contact with devotees, they carry a certain nature, and then even after becoming Krishna conscious, that particular nature or flavor carries forward. So Dhruv Maharaj was like very aggressive or whatever before Kshatriya by nature, but even within Kshatriya he may have been a little more on the aggressive side or whatever. So was that his original, like that nature came out when he was responding to that perceived injustice, or how does it work? Like, to what extent we can actually, you know, overcome those anarthas or whatever?
Yes, he was influenced, but he also immediately submitted to Swayambhuva Manu, immediately stopped and repented for what he had done. So, yes, we may have a particular nature that we carry with us, and still, as we make progress, we may still be influenced by it. So your question is how to deal with it? Well, I guess the best way to deal with it, I guess to answer your question, would be to tolerate. Which is basically what this whole section is about. We should know what our shortcomings are. We should know what our imperfect tendencies are. And we should pray to the Lord to help eradicate these unwanted tendencies within the core of the heart. And in this way, at least by being conscious of it and not being in denial of it, because sometimes that's what people do. They'll say, it's me, what can I do? It's the way I am. I can't change. You know? And they may be in denial of certain tendencies which are not conducive for devotional service. But at least if a devotee is aware of it and tries to overcome it by the right means, then gradually in due course of time, Krishna can eradicate it from within his heart. Or, as in some cases, it can be dovetailed. As Narottam Das Thakur says, you know, anger can be dovetailed, lust can be dovetailed, madness can be dovetailed, bewilderment can be dovetailed, envy cannot. But to be dovetailed means that somebody else puts us in the right direction. Our tendency is to think, yes, by my own choice and by my own discretion, I'll determine for myself what I will dovetail and how will I use it for Krishna's service. But then I become the sole criteria of what Krishna's service is. And actually, what we're in the name of dovetailing, we're just fulfilling our own attachments. You know, I remember one very common phenomenon I used to experience a long time ago with many devotees who were very much attached to rock and roll music. And they were always telling how they were going to dovetail their talents for the service of the Lord. You know, and although clearly it had no place in the service of the Lord, but they were convinced, I will dovetail it. And I used to say, yes, you'll dovetail it, but you'll also have to eat the consequences. And inevitably, it would always manifest. So, what is next? Huh? Kirtan. Okay. Hare Krishna.